Hello, y'all. Welcome back. It's Dr. Nicole Truesdell here. And as always, I'm your host and guide for my podcast, Abolitionist Dreamscape. So welcome. All right, y'all, we did it. It's episode 10. I made it to episode 10 of season one, which means that this is also the last episode for season one. Now, don't worry, there'll be seasons two and plenty more after that. But to wrap up this first season, I'm going to stop it at 10 episodes. And this is a fitting time to kind of wrap up the season. I started the season about 4 months ago. Dropped the first episode on the new moon in Cancer, and that's pretty fitting. Cancer is the womb. Cancer is the waters, is the mother, right? It is the shore. It is, in modern astrology, the fourth house, which is the lowest part of our chart. It's our roots and foundations. It's what we birth, right? And so I birthed this podcast on the new moon, and now I am ending the first season in the full moon of Gemini, right? So Gemini ruled by Mercury, which is communication. Also in the modern astrology rules the third house, which is where social media is and short-term travel and the like. And so this podcast ending on the full moon in Gemini, at least the first season, is going to be a place where I'll be reflecting upon what I've learned the last 4 months, because it has really helped me. Doing this podcast, engaging in this way, has really helped me figure out how I want to create and show up in the public. And so I'm going to be talking about that this episode a little bit more for you all. But before we get into that, as always, I have to do my housekeeping before we get into the gist of this episode. And so as always, I want to thank my patrons. I've got a Patreon, Abolitionist Dreamscapes, which is the same title as this podcast. And there I go in much more in depth of what it means to break things that don't work for us, as well as dreaming of different ways to be. So what does it mean to break the hold that oppressive systems has in our understanding of the human, and therefore living in life, so that we can come back into a deeper sense of humanity and remove ourselves from this kind of superficial performance of what it means to live that is very dehumanizing to ourselves and one another. As we're breaking that and breaking open and coming into our heart center, coming into our heart space, coming into our humanity, we got to dream then of what does it mean to actually do this thing called life, right? To actually embody that humanity so that we can move in different ways. So hence abolitionist dreamscapes. And so what are the kind of landscapes and soundscapes and kind of futures that we are conjuring that we can start to embody and enact in the present, so that we have different futures for those coming after us? So I get into that and a lot more on my Patreon. So if you want to support my work, please see how to do so in the show notes below. The tiers start at $5 a month, and the higher tiers, then you get more videos from me, more engagement, more of my writings. And then at the soundscapes and higher, we do a group call once a month. So if you want to be able to engage more with me and really start to dream and conjure while also breaking things that don't work, check out my Patreon, okay? And also, for those who aren't able to financially support right now, but who have also supported in other ways, I also want to say a big thank you as well. The likes, the shares, the comments on the podcast, on the various platforms, has really been great, because it helps me personally know that people want to listen to what I'm talking about and are engaged. But it also helps grow the podcast as well. As I've said in previous episodes, I am looking for sponsors, and I hope to have the podcast have sponsorship going forward, so that future seasons will be more seasoned, so that the podcast kind of over time and space really does grow into itself and mature in ways that reflects me and what I want the space to reflect for you all to engage in. Your likes, shares, and comments really do help. And I want to say thank you all for all those, everybody who's written for me and rocked with me from the beginning. It's really appreciated. And listen, if you want to work with me, again, if you follow me, you know that I'm a former academic who left higher education about 2 years ago to go off on my own. own. And when I did that, I also broke the rest of my life. So I'm a Black queer single mama who's also an independent businesswoman, and abolitionist dreamscapes is what I also do for a living. So if you want to work with me, there's various ways to do so. I'm an anthropologist by training, but an abolitionist scholar, teacher, and astrologer in practice. And I do have astrology readings that I offer in the public. So if you're looking for a journey to self reading, which is an in-depth natal reading from me through an abolitionist lens, you can see how to do so on my website, drnicoletruesdell.com. I'm taking a limited number of bookings for December, and then my books will open up much more fully once January and February hit. But once 2024 hits, my prices are increasing. It's just the cost of doing business, quite frankly. So if you are interested in getting that journey to self reading from me and you want 2023 pricing, please check out my website to see how to book with me. Again, I've got a limited number of bookings for December available. I also do coaching. I do one-on-one and group coaching. I've done it for a number of different individuals and various institutions. And again, I do my coaching through an abolitionist lens. If you follow me on places like TikTok and IG, you might have heard me say before that when I coach people, I cannot coach you into accepting your abuse. So when you work with me, what I do is I center you and I center your embodiment and ask you to, through various different ways, to believe your experiences. And if you believe your experiences, then how would you move? And so there's various ways that I coach people through that, depending upon what they are looking for in a coach. And I tend to do more executive / DEI type of coaching, again, for individuals and groups. Majority of my clients tend to be Black and Brown and Indigenous women, queer, and non-binary folks, but I am open to all demographics, as long as you understand that you are working with somebody who will work with you through an abolitionist lens. So again, I've got openings for new clients starting in 2024. So if you're interested in that, please check out my website and reach out. We can go into more detail of what that entails, along with costs and the like. Okay. And finally, I also am a consultant. So I do consulting for organizations and departments across various industries who are looking to either start a new program or project, who are looking to re-engage with their work. So you are doing kind of a reset, or you're doing a review and you've got a new set of priorities that you need to figure out how to roll out. Or if you're sunsetting an organization or program. So I do the whole life cycle of program development and office development, along with, quite frankly, small type of nonprofit development. So if you're looking for a consultant for any of those life cycles, you can also figure out, you can also go ahead and reach out to me. Again, my website has the information how to do so. And finally, I'm available for keynotes and speaking engagements. Again, everything's my website. So that from astrology readings to coaching, to consulting, to keynote and interviewing, run the gamut for there. You can find out various ways to work with me through my website, again, drnicoletruesdell.com. And I'm also working on my book. it's slowly coming along, but it's coming. It's really a combination of various books I started before into one with a newer twist to it. So I'm working on Planting Seeds of Abolitionist Dreams. And if you want to read more of my writings, I have a Substack as well. You can see how to subscribe there in the show notes below. Okay, so I think that is all the different ways that you can either work with or book me in one way, shape, or form. Okay, all right. So let's talk about what this season has taught me. I'm not gonna lie, y'all. This season has been a really interesting journey for me because it's helped me realize that I really do want to live, but I'm figuring out what the hell that means. And the podcast is a space that is helping me do so. So what do I mean by that? When I first started this, I had really only put myself out there through things like TikTok. So I was starting to gain more traction on my TikTok account, and that was where I was also gaining more folks to join other things that I was building at the time, like my Patreon. I had my Patreon. I started that, I want to say, August of 2022. And so for the past year and some change, I've really been growing that space as one location that I can continue to create and teach with others with some compensation. Because something that I've realized is that even though I'm no longer in higher education, I do have some habits that I still am holding on to that I'm realizing I got to break. And one of them is feeling like I got to continuously prove myself and give up more so that maybe I'll get something back in return. And usually what I'm giving out and what I'm getting in return isn't necessarily equal. So I'm not getting rejuvenated. I'm still feeling depleted. And that's something that I've realized I've been doing on my social media accounts, is that it was a habit. It's a very bad habit from higher ed. It's a very bad habit, quite frankly, of being suffering under abusive systems and working under abusive people for so long that it's kind of a second nature for me. And I bet you about it, a lot of you probably have similar kind of habits you don't realize, is that I got so used to feeling like I had to prove myself in order to be in the door, or had to prove myself in order for folks to kind of listen to me or buy into what I'm saying, that I give too much, like I overproduce, right? So when I was working in higher ed, I was always working, like I was always creating. I built offices in no time. I built a whole institute within a year working with other people, right? Put on conferences, created different types of projects that got funding, like I was doing conferences and giving talks, and it was nonstop, y'all, because I felt like, and if I'm being honest, like I realized that I was trying to prove that I belonged there, even though I didn't want to be there. That's the irony, right? Of not realizing the habits we have. Like I was always in this kind of prove it mode, that I can show you better than I can tell you. That was something I would always tell folks, especially when I had to talk with higher ups, right? Whether it be kind of presidents or provosts or VPs or board of trustee members, right? I was always feeling like I had to prove that my office or my work belonged in the space, even though my work or my office was trying to break the space. There's always this kind of tug and pull. And that happens when you're in the plantation, right? The higher ed, like any institution in the US, is a plantation model. It's a plantation economy. So it's a plantation model. And so when you're trying to fit in the master's house, right, the master will always going to make you feel inferior because they need you to give up more of your labor than they're willing to pay for. Now, I know that intellectually, I teach the shit, right? But then being there, there's a way that even knowing that I hadn't embodied it, because I figured if I can just show you the work is good, or show you the work is doing what it said it's going to do, then the work will show itself. But I also knew that was a damn lie, because no matter how much you prove or show, the floor will always move. And that floor always moved, right? To the point where, get this, y'all, to the point where when I was working at Beloit, one of the last year or two I was there, the institution was going through financial difficulties. Now, they had kind of taken a willful blind eye, quite frankly, to it, because one of the former CFOs had quote unquote found money that when she left and the new CFO came in, realized that money wasn't actually really there. It might have been on the paper, but it was not in them damn in the books, right? So they were in this kind of deficit. And at the same time, the retention rates weren't that great, especially for populations that were considered quote unquote at risk. So that's going to be students of color, that's going to be first gen, low income. When you really break out the demographics, it can be LGBTQIA students, basically students at the margins of society or of those institutions that were never imagined to be in those institutions at its conception, right? So this is really anybody who was not a white, male, able-bodied, land-owning person, if we're being honest, right? So at the time, the institution was going through it. Now, I had an office that I had created that housed all of the programs that work with underserved and underrepresented students in higher ed, along with also taking on the work of doing institutional kind of I guess, education around what it means to actually work with populations at the margins. Okay. So we call it diversity work, but I was really, my office didn't necessarily do traditional diversity work. We did what I called anti-diversity work because I wasn't doing the work. And I wrote an article about this, actually, a couple of articles about this with colleagues, is that the work we were doing was not about just numbers and rubrics and checking boxes. It really was about breaking foundations. And so if diversity through an institutional model was about numbers and the like, the work we were doing is really about, can you even hold those numbers? And if you can't, then we're not doing diversity work. We're doing anti-diversity work because we're doing essentially abolitionist work, foundational work. Now, I don't know if I would necessarily adhere to that logic right now. I got what I understood what I was thinking then, but the more I have sat back and been away from the institution, that was still a way that I was lying to myself, because I was still in the damn institution trying to do work that I knew good and goddamn well they didn't really want to be fully done. They just wanted the performance of it so that they could check the box saying that they had diversity. That's a whole nother conversation I'll get into next season. But for the purposes of this, right, what I did, so long story short, so that's what the institution was. Well, my office was a space that no matter how you ran those numbers, we outperformed the institution. We had higher retention numbers overall for the students that we served than the institution, especially with the demographics, because all the programs we worked with students who were either first generation college, low income, had a documented disability, were students of color, LGBTQIA. We even worked with undocumented students who were not part of, nor were they funded by any federal funds. We also had institutional funds as well. So we have worked with a lot of different types of demographics of students. Now, when it came time for the board meeting and they needed to give the board numbers, the numbers weren't looking good at all, except for my office, right? And to the point where when I say they will move the fucking floor on you, the Office of Institutional Data, I forget what they call themselves, places where they look at the data and they run the numbers for the institution, right? They ran those numbers every which way. They took out more demographics. They combined demographics in order to show that the institution's numbers were better somewhere. And every time they ran them fucking numbers, my office still outperformed the institution. So that board book, in order for that board book to have anything really positive that had tangible results, they had to include my office, even though my office was a bane in the fucking existence of that provost, of them administrators, and quite frankly, of half them board of trustees, because they refused to believe that the location that was supposedly the place that all the quote unquote non-majority go was the only space that actually could show what it means to put the liberal arts into practice, right? So I say that story to say, even with all of that, y'all, they still moved that floor, and the work that was done, the work that I did, the work that my team did, right? The minute I left, they dismantled all that shit. They dismantled it, they consumed it within the institution, they remixed it, softened the language. And right now, who the hell knows how the numbers are? I really don't care. But that was one of the harder lessons I had to learn, is that when you try to work within the foundations, when you try to work within the institutions, when you try to work within the master's house to be seen by the master will always move the floor on you so that you feel like you have to give more and do more. So at Brown, when I was at Brown, did the exact same thing, came in too damn hot and heavy, wanted to fix everybody's shit, right? Constructed a whole institute within a year with the centers that I was working with. I thought we all were together on this collaboration bit. Everybody said they wanted to collaborate and cooperate, even though I knew good and damn well behind the scenes, didn't none of them want to collaborate or cooperate, and half of them couldn't stand each other, but they were all performing these ideas of justice in the public because that was the persona of all of their centers, right? And so long story short there, the same thing, right? After a long battle with folks and getting protested and quite frankly, having my ass handed to me because I realized I got played, right? When I left that space, I told myself that I would stop overperforming, that I would stop trying to prove myself all the damn time, that I can just be okay who I am and I can just show up as me. Well, you know what I realized? That sounds good in theory, but in practice, I haven't really done that very well. And this podcast has helped me see that, right? And it's not the podcast that I'm overperforming. I realized that it's been on my social media platforms, on my TikTok and now my IG, mostly TikTok, because my IG, I tend to just repost my TikToks, and I will start playing with kind of more of the written text on IG, because that space is more curated for that. But overall, TikTok has been my main social media outlet to create. And after a while, I realized that every video I was doing for a while, I would put in essentially mini syllabi. I was having recommended readings for most of my videos for a while, and they were long. Like, I would have a number of readings. I have the Gorilla Resource Library that I have for free, that a lot of those readings were in, and if I didn't have them, I would give the whole citation so folks can come get them, right? And I'm not gonna lie, y'all, the shit was exhausting. Like, it was exhausting, and I would, you know, and I did that for months, and I was doing that up until a few months ago, like keeping the citations. And then when I stopped doing the citations that way, I found out how to edit and put overlays in the videos. I thought I was doing some shit, y'all. I was like, hey, I learned some shit today. And started doing overlays in order to have citations that way. I thought I was doing less work by screenshotting different articles and journals and newspapers and using that as a citational practices in my videos, right? I'm realizing I was overperforming. I'll be quite frank with you, it's overperforming. And like, I'm a single mom, like, and also a businesswoman, and I'm giving away all of this labor for free. And I realize that the return, and this is not about a capitalistic model, like where I'm expecting every single thing to have some kind of monetary value back. That's not what I'm saying. I'm talking about exchange. And I was realizing that there was not an equal exchange going on, because when I would go into my TikTok, I was realizing in the mornings I wake up, I have anxiety thinking about, okay, what am I posting today? And feeling like I needed to be caught up on what's going on. So not just in the news, but also what's going on in the TikTok world. So I found myself on TikTok a hell of a lot longer than I wanted to be, neglecting things that I actually also wanted to do, which was quite frankly, write or create more things for my Patreon and the like. And so doing the podcast, right, I told myself I would commit it to every 2 weeks on the moon cycle, starting on that new moon in Cancer and using the moon cycle to get into a rhythm, right, of creating and releasing, creating and releasing, creating and releasing a bit, because this full and new moon cycles, even though that's a 28-day lunar cycle, the actual full to new moon cycle for the signs is a six-month one, right? Full moon starts, so the full moon in Cancer was in July, where 6 months later, I mean, the new moon was in July, so the full moon will be 6 months later, completing that zodiac cycle, right? So the podcast was a way for me to experiment, but to have a timing that to me felt more aligned with my humanity, which is that lunar cycle. And as I was doing this, and I realized that I'm here just kind of talking, I get a little more in depth of different topics, especially topics that I'm really that are true to my heart, which is talking about the relationship between abolition, ancestors, and astrology, right? I've always been a very quote unquote spiritual person, but not in that kind of love and light way, as I've talked about before, but in that dark underground, underworld way, right? Like me and the dead be talking, and sometimes I wish they'd shut the fuck up, and I know sometimes they wish I'd shut the fuck up. So it's a mutual relationship that I fucks with, right? But I needed a space to be able to talk about all these things and not bifurcate it. So coming on the podcast, it helped me understand pace a bit better and helped me realize that if I feel good doing this, even when I sometimes feel like I'm just rambling and wonder if anyone will listen to what I'm saying, or if you got what the hell I was saying, and then I get the feedback saying that it made sense. Thank y'all. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. Going back over to TikTok then, I was realizing that I was getting into a bad habit of feeling like I had to always be on, feel like I had to always, and also not only be on, but prove that I knew what I was talking about, prove that I wasn't making some shit up, right? And then getting basically, honestly, sometimes getting defensive or feeling a kind of way when I would just have folks essentially trolling. And the thing is, I understand a troll, right? I was in fucking higher ed for 22 years, right? If the biggest trolls, quite frankly, are other academics who want to ask you a question, but that damn question ends up being a 15-minute monologue, right? That's a troll. That's a motherfucking troll, okay? So I was used to trolling, but I was realizing that it was triggering. It was triggering in me something that I needed to face, which was essentially my own inability just to be okay with who I am as I am without proving myself. That I always felt like I had to give extra and give more. And then feeling some kind of way when I wasn't getting things in return, except for people asking me for more shit. And again, I talked about this before. I forget which episode it was, but you have to teach people how to treat you, right? That we love a good quote, Maya, you gotta teach people how to treat you. But I was teaching people in the public that they could treat me like a fucking encyclopedia. My DMs, y'all, when I opened up my TikTok DMs, I wasn't getting DMs about, hey, can I take you out? I would like those DMs, right? But I don't get those DMs, really. I got that DM once in a relationship and that didn't work out. So maybe I don't want them. I don't know. Maybe I don't want them DMs, but I prefer those DMs over the ones I have getting, especially lately, where it's just asking me for more labor. It's asking me for more and more and more. No matter, even when I have the citations in the damn videos, right? When I had the whole thing laid out, people are still asking me, what is that? What is that? What is, like, I'm realizing that I have to be the one who takes charge of my life. You know what I'm saying, y'all? And I wasn't. I was giving it up again. Right. And I thought, and maybe I was like, well, that's not a big deal. Right. It's only one part of me. But no, TikTok and the social media is one major part of how I connect with people right now. Right. As I'm starting and remaking over again, it's how I push my other offerings out. Right. Like my Patreon, like my writing, like my consulting, like it's how I've been able to get some speaking gigs. Right. And I really do like giving keynotes and stuff. So there's a way that it's not about me rejecting social media fully at all. It's about me having a better relationship with it, which means that I had to have a better relationship and get clear about who the hell I am and how I want to show up in the public. And so, like the past 4 months, right, it really has been teaching me that if I don't feed myself, there's no way that I can feed anybody else. And I'm not feeding myself by giving away so much without asking for an exchange in one way, shape, or form. And so this podcast and the episode and the season, right, has really helped me see that I am going to take the month of December to kind of recurate my my online presence and really get clearer about what does it mean to show up in the public to teach, because there's a way that you can't just keep giving without being depleted. And I've already been down that road. I've been down that road over and over and over again. And this time when my body started to really flare up again, I've had chronic pain off and on throughout most of my life. In the past, I want to say 2-3 weeks, the pain has really flared bad in my right side, in my back, and in my hip and my leg. And this time I talk about embodiment a lot, y'all, right? This is not about you get it once and then it clicks on and then everything's smooth and great. No, when you embody, it becomes another knowing so that it helps you understand when you're going back into old habits or when you're doing something that's running counter to actually your constitution, right? Your body becomes another site of knowledge and knowing that is talking to you, that is always talking to you, but can you listen and hear what the body is saying? And then if you can hear and listen, do you believe? Right? This is a lot of the coaching I do with folks. Like, do you believe? And if you believe that knowing, that body knowing, and you actually embody that knowing and you believe it, then how are you going to move? Right? How do you move? This is the responsibility we take for our life. And this is what I mean by I'm saying I'm still learning what it means to live. And for me, living is not just me showing up in the public as one-dimensional me, as just the educator, as somebody that's always got a citation or always got a lesson. No, sometimes I just want to kiki. Sometimes I almost want to be messy. I might purse a thirst trap once I figure out how that would look for me. I'm still me, right? I'm still a newly single, divorced, coming out queer later in life, right? Woman who's starting to really feel my womanhood in my 40s, right? Like, talk about a sex drive kicking up, holy shit. But also the fact that I realize I'm a sexual being, right? All of these things are parts of me. I'm realizing more that, like, I don't really think I'm a content creator. I think I'm a creative. And part of my creativity is I make some content, right? But like, I am much more a poet, and I am much more somebody else who wants to kind of play in the kaleidoscopes of imaginations in different ways. And so why am I boxing myself in one way? Because I'm doing the boxing in, right? Because I'm the one that shows up in my social platforms as me. Why am I still relying upon one dimensional way of me being myself? Now, that's not to say that I don't have multiple kind of videos, right? But I realized I was leaning heavily into this one aspect that was quote unquote more comfortable for me, but that wasn't really comfort. It was just familiarity. So when I ask these questions, right, is it comfortable or is it just familiar? Is it safety and security or is it just stagnation, right? It's because I have to ask myself these questions all the time in order for me to check into my reality and check out of the kind of conditioning that gets me just to perform and just to produce. When I told myself and I asked my spirits, I asked my ancestors, I asked the Orisha for my freedom because I wanted to create. If I ask for my freedom to be human, to create, then when I go into production mode, right, because again, it's just a habit that I have to face in order to break, then my knowing is much more intense now. And the omens are much more intense now that it's like, girl, you in danger. You don't want to do that shit. Are you sure you want to do that shit? Are you sure you want to do that shit? And the more I didn't look at that, the louder my body got, right? So I realized all the lessons I've been talking about in the past 9 episodes, like, came to a head and was teaching me again the past couple of weeks. As I realized that this, you know, my season 1 was coming to an end, and telling myself that I wanted to come back for a season 2 and asking myself, okay, Nicole, do you like this? And I realized, yes, I do. And all the ideas I have for the future, right? Let me know that I have the ability to determine how I want to show up. I just have to commit to the newer version of me that I asked for, literally, that I talked about in episode 1. And so now at this episode 10, I'm realizing, girl, it's here. So do I want to live? And if I want to live, then I need to live, and which means that I have to show up as me. And I'm a complicated, convoluted, messy human being like any other human, right? It's just that I realized I wanted to be a human that was more authentically me and not perform those kind of heteronormative ideals that were put upon me. And so, you know, in all that breaking, I'm still breaking, right? I'm still figuring out who I am. I'm still figuring out what I like. I'm still figuring out who I want to be in community with, right? I realize a lot that I got a lot of love in me, which shocks me sometimes, quite frankly. I get irritated with myself. I wish I could be a cold, stone cold bitch, but I can't. I mean, I can, but I can't, but I can, but I can't. You know what I mean? It's quite fascinating, honestly. Like, and I'll be honest, most of my life, I felt like an alien. Maybe it's that fourth house in Aquarius that I have with my south node, but I really have felt like an alien. And I think that's probably why I spent most of my career examining the human, because I wanted to figure out what it meant to be human. I thought maybe if I understood it more, it wouldn't hurt so much, or like it wouldn't be so uncomfortable, or it wouldn't be so awkward. Because I feel like most of my life, most situations, it was just really awkward because I had no idea what the hell I was doing. But then I realized something, y'all. No, that's what life is. That's what's figuring out what it means to live. That's what curiosity is. That's what gaining experience is, right? And so it's kind of it's kind of interesting, but also quite telling that in my search to figure out what it means to be human, and in all that learning and all that experiencing and all of that kind of engagement, what I did learn was how to dehumanize myself in the process of learning what it means to be human. And so as I embody then all those lessons, right, I don't want to dehumanize myself anymore. Like it's kind of shitty, like, and it sucks and it don't pay the fucking bills anyway. So then why do it, right? It doesn't make any sense. And so, like I was saying earlier, what I'm going to do is in this downtime between seasons, I'll come back sometime in January. I'll look at the lunar cycle. On top of my head, I don't remember. But I'll look at the lunar cycle and put a post on when the next season will come out. But I'm also going to take this time to kind of rethink and recurate what does it mean for me to show up in the public as well, so that I'm representing me and not just performing one side of me. Because again, that is what I'm used to. I don't have to prove myself anymore. And I say that to all of you as well. You don't have to prove yourselves anymore. Like, you don't have to prove that you're worthy enough anymore to be in spaces. Like, I think that that becomes a trap, because when do you stop proving? When are you just okay to be, right? Or is it always a game of proving? Are you always on your toes? Or you always have your back up? That's not healthy. It doesn't actually allow you to live. It actually causes you more stress. It breaks the body down. It takes your life, even as you think you're providing yourself more of a life, right? If you just can do it enough here, then you'll one day eventually have X over there. And we keep seeing over and over that that's a falsehood, that's an illusion. So why not just live right now? But in that living, right, a lot of things will break because we don't realize how much we haven't been taught how to live. We've just been taught how to do. And when you want to sit in being versus doing, when you want to sit in creativity versus productivity, man, there's a bit of a learning curve there, right? There's a bit of a learning curve. And so I'm learning that curve right now, y'all. And it's an interesting one. So yeah, so we'll see how, you know, what the new year will bring, quite frankly, the new calendar year. We'll still be in winter. So I think this is also a reminder that just because the calendar tells us that we're moving into a new year and spring forward, we're still going to be in the dead of goddamn winter here in the Northern Hemisphere. So things will take a minute. So really think about the new year as coming when the spring comes in March, right? But this kind of new calendar year, I think, gives us the permission to take a step back and really ask ourselves the question, what is it that we're trying to plant? What is it that we're trying to birth once the spring happens? And if we're trying to birth something when the spring happens, what needs to die off in the winter, right? What needs to kind of be laid to rest? Because just as nature goes through a constant life and death cycle, so too must we. Again, there is multiple ways to live, which means there's multiple ways to die. And as a Scorpio rising, I would not be doing my job on this earth if I did not continuously ask myself what parts of myself do need to kind of die so that I can fully begin to live. And I think I know that's what I'll be doing as we go into the winter and start the wintering process to emerge in the spring, because I'm committed to abolitionist dreamscapes. As my business, as this podcast, as my work, as my creativity, it really does embody what it means to essentially break things that don't work, to bring the kind of chaos to what's already chaotic so that there's a different energy there. And in doing so, what can we imagine and dream? What is possible? Because anything is impossible until it is not. So we can bring the impossibility into the possible by bringing the kind of sacred into the mundane. And for me, this is what it means to come back into our humanity, to come back into a right relationship with living in life and the land and our ancestors, one another and ourselves. And so this is my abolitionist dreams, y'all. This is my dreamscapes. And so I want to thank you all for dreaming with me in this first season. Thanks again. It's been a great first season. Look out for season 2 sometime at the beginning of the new year. I will again have on my YouTube channel, so please subscribe there, more postings of when season 2 will happen. But as we go into the winter in the Northern Hemisphere, allow yourselves as much as you can to winter so that you can really face the darkness and the cold, really face yourself and start to ask yourself some really reflective questions about who do you believe and why. And if you believe your experiences, What will you do? How would you move? How would you act? How would you be? And if any of those answers scare you, that's okay. Lean into it some more, because that means you are opening yourself up to an impossibility that you subconsciously know can truly be possible. So go ahead and dream. All right. Okay, y'all, let me know what you think below. And as always, keep dreaming, keep wishing, keep allowing yourselves to open up to the possibilities, because it is through our dreamscapes that we can find our humanity. Till next season, take care of yourselves.